I brought you a special present.
What is it?
Open it up.
As I was limping over there to beat him.
If you grab the guy's face mask and twist his head, then, like I tried to do to Terry Obey that cut me into the mud, that is something that's different, and that's a penalty.
You look forward to it every week here with Bob, Dave, and more, a chance to sit back, relax, Jim, take a nap. Story time with Dave Wyman.
Yeah, we're just going to go for 10 or 12 minutes here because we were going to do it in a segment. And we got McLean, John McLean from Houston, who is fantastic. Jim, he's been
loved him.
The Houston Chronicle for like 40 years or something like that.
I saw his Twitter timeline, 43 years covering the NFL for the Houston Chronicle.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, he's really funny. So anyway, I was going to talk about my dad, but I got to say this today. Biggest upset in marriage history. Today, May 22nd, I was married to Shannon 27 years ago. She's hung in there with me.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, so, thank you. 27 years. So, yeah, quite an upset.
It must have been your opening line to
her. Happy anniversary, Dave.
Thanks. Yeah, do you get sweaty? That one?
That's still the greatest story ever.
Well, I'll tell it really quick for anybody that doesn't know, because I always, the second I came to Seattle, I was like, wow, who's that? And Shannon was always, I just looked at the 1991 on YouTube. You can get the 91 Seahawk, highlight film or low light film in that case. But in the beginning, they show like a shot of like 5 or 6 seconds of her dancing. When I was in London, they had a whole thing that they did, like a Seahawk montage. You'd think I would be in there somewhere. No, my wife, she's the one that was, she was always the one in there she's in more highlights than I'll ever be. But, she did it for a long time, and she has some great friends, from that group, the Seagals. I mean, she has like 5 or 6 really, really good friends that she still keeps in touch with and, you know, does Zoom parties now and stuff. So, and a lot of people would think that it would be like, you know, those housewife shows, you know, where, yeah, 253, that's a stupid thing to say. That's not even funny. So anyway, you know who you are. But yeah, she's got some fantastic friends from those days, but very cool. So, but I wanted to talk really quick about my dad. And the reason why is because, you know, we saw this Jordan thing and how Michael Jordan, what his dad meant to him and how involved he was. And so I kind of was thinking a little bit about my dad. So I had to text my mom a couple of details because my dad and mom both grew up in San Diego. And so, my dad, he had an older sister and a younger sister, but when he was 12, his dad died. So he kind of became the man of the house, and they lived on a chicken farm, or they owned and operated a chicken farm. So my dad would do everything from, you know, collect the eggs to sell to wring the chickens' necks, and I think that they sent them off to Campbell's. I think some of them went to like restaurants, some of the chicken, but a lot of them went to Campbell's for chicken soup, I guess. So that's kind of how they made their living. And, you know, he kind of became the man of the house at age 12. So, he was always working. And so he wasn't much of an athlete, you know. So really quick, he married my mom. You know, they fell in love when they were in high school, and then, you know, had my brother and I. And my mom, I wouldn't say her family was like well off, but they were doing pretty well because her dad had fought in World War II, and then he had like a hardwood flooring company. But then, and Jim, you'll love this, the only thing it's missing is gambling, but he had a shop that was a golf/liquor store.
Nice.
And I'm trying to find the name of it. It was called, I can't remember exactly what it was called. Oh, it was called Village Liquor and Golf. So, he was pretty well to do, I would say, but my dad just didn't, he wanted to kind of blaze his own trail. So he ended up taking my brother and I up to, and my mom, up to Eureka. He went to Humboldt State. He put himself through, got his forestry degree. And then he ended up working for Crown Zellerbach down in Camas. And actually, I went to kindergarten in Camas, Washington. I don't know if anybody's around my age. Do you remember Mrs. Peters? Because that was my kindergarten teacher in Camas. But then, you know, and then he eventually, you know, started working for other companies, worked for a little private logging firm called Soper Wheeler, worked for Simpson Timber Company. And but, you know, my point is he wasn't much of an athlete. So like my brother and I, my dad would always overdo things. So we were out in the woods, out in the middle of nowhere, and he put a basketball backboard and rim up on this tree and bolted it down. I mean, it was like, I don't think Shaq could have brought this thing down because my dad would always overbuild everything. But basically our court was just dirt, and it was kind of sloped down, and then the basket was on a tree. And so that's kind of, you know, and so he would come home from, you know, from work, and he'd have his logging boots on, and he'd come out there and like dribble with both hands. And then whenever we tried to go around him, he'd grab us. We're like, Dad, that's not how you play basketball, you know, but he wasn't, you know, much of an athlete. But the thing is, he was really involved in my athletic life and in the best possible way, because he didn't ever try to give me any advice or anything. One of the things that he did is he became like one of the best photographers. I mean, he has some of the greatest pictures of me playing football. And him and my mom were just always there. They were always there at whatever event. As a matter of fact, my junior year, I twisted my ankle really bad at the end of the basketball season. I took my shoe off, and it looked like there was a grapefruit growing out of the side of my ankle. And so I was going to miss the state tournament, and I decided to try to play anyway. And so I had this trainer, you know, just tape up my, like it was like a cast. And I wasn't supposed to be playing, but I convinced the coach to let me play. And I went, and I didn't tell my parents, and they were mad at me. And the reason was because they couldn't come watch. They wanted to come and watch it. So yeah, that was just kind of the support that I got from my parents and from my dad. So when people ask, you know, how involved were you in, was your dad involved in your, you know, athletic career? And a lot of times, you know, I think there's a lot of parents that kind of err on the side of maybe trying to coach their kids up, whereas my dad was just there, and he was just watching. So as a matter of fact, in the state championship game, Worcester High School, 1980, where we lost, somebody was texting in something about how I sound like Al Bundy. I'm like, Al Bundy copied that whole thing from me. Okay, talking about Polk High.
Polk High, six touchdowns.
Yeah, exactly. But I got an interception, and I was running it back, and then so we end up losing the game. But in the car, my dad goes, yeah, you know, you reached back and swatted the guy's hand away when you caught that ball because there was a receiver behind me. And I was like, I did? You know, and then I saw the film later. And it made me realize how closely he was watching me. Like, he was watching everything that I did. And then, you know, as far as advice, there was never anything other than just the good, solid, you know, work ethic things that came from him. Because, you know, it's interesting because, and I kind of fell into this trap. I was telling Kendall, my daughter, at one point, how to play goalie. And I was talking to her about, you know, cutting the angle down and everything. And then I stopped myself because, number one, I looked up and I saw this little, like, 8-year-old blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl looking at me like, what are you talking about? And secondly, I've never played goalie. So I just decided to just stop, and I never did that ever again to my kids, and got a lot of that from both my parents, really. I always say that I got all the nastiness from my mom because she's pretty fiery.
What?
But it's kind of a joke. It's kind of a joke. No, she is fantastic. She was always there. But yeah, that's something that, as far as being a parent, and there was a thing, and maybe you've heard of him, Jim, a guy named Bruce Brown, I think is his name. He goes around and does talks about, you know, and I know he came to the kids' school, Bear Creek, where it's like how you should be, how involved should you be with your kid as far as sports go, because a lot of parents will scream and yell at him. And I remember there's a guy up here on the plateau. He had this kid who's a quarterback, and it was on my son's team, and the kid threw an interception, and he screamed at him from the sidelines or up in the stands. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I can't. You think that kid wanted to throw that interception? So, I mean, but this Bruce Brown guy, one of the things that he talked about is that for kids, when they were asked about what was the worst part of your youth sports experience, 90% said the car ride home. So, I mean, that's, you know, the coaching and everything. All you really need to do as a parent is just be there and support them. And I'm not an expert on it, but I'm just telling you from my experience that both my parents really, but, you know, my dad, as far as everybody thinks, oh, well, I'm sure your dad was really into your career. Yeah, he was, but it wasn't like he was coaching me or criticizing me or anything like that. He was just there. And, you know, he gave me all the good work ethic things. But another funny thing about my dad, and this, my mom likes to give him a hard time about this, but he was in a car club when he was in high school. They were called the Gear Lords. And so he had like this big leather jacket. My mom still makes fun of him about that. But yeah, I could not have asked for a better dad as far as that stuff goes. And I see every once in a while, you know, one time I was at one of Kendall's soccer games, and I bring a lawn chair and a newspaper, and I was watching her play, but I wasn't going to pace up and down the sidelines. And one of the other parents is like, "Hey, you know, you were competitive. You were as competitive as anybody. You know, what? Why are you so calm and just sitting there?" And he was pacing up and down. I go, "Because they're little girls, okay? They're 10-year-old girls playing soccer. Do you have money on this game? I mean, you just sit back and relax and watch it." But a lot of that I got from my dad, so it was very, very cool. So I can't do.
You had a newspaper at your. You had your newspaper there.
Well, there's some downtime, man, when she was not in there playing, and you know where kids are kicking the ball out of the, you know, out of bounds and stuff. But I was there watching her. I just wasn't going to get all excited and fired up and scream and yell. And you see a lot of that. I've seen some bad stuff, and I've seen some good stuff. Jeff Kemp was probably backup quarterback for the Seahawks, maybe one of the best. And his son, Corey, works for the Seahawks. But Jeff was just amazing. With one time I saw him go over to a parent who was screaming and yelling on the sidelines, and in like the nicest way go, "Hey, why don't you let us handle this part of it, and you just be here for your son?" And it, the way he did it, if I would have said it, the guy would have told me to bleep off or whatever. But Jeff had a way of just handling that just so well. And at the end of the football season, there were like kids getting up in like in tears. And these are 6th, 7th graders talking about how much it meant to them. And he just had a knack for, it's kind of like what Michael Jordan said about Phil Jackson, just of drawing guys in and making them part of the team and made it special. So, yeah, there's a lot of really cool lessons. But I always thought that was the one thing that probably my dad, you know, did the best, is that he was always there and he always supported me. And, you know, he took pictures, things like that. But there was never any coaching, never any screaming or yelling or anything like that. And I always really appreciated that.
Well, and that's something I appreciate, too. And I've heard you talk about your dad like that before, Dave. And having, you know, a couple of 16-year-olds that are playing baseball and playing golf and basketball, that type of thing. And I just really like hearing that, because sometimes I sit there as a dad thinking, okay, you know, I need to get him to do this more. I need to get him to do that more. And I need to give him more advice. And I need, you know, there's been a couple of, you know, they've got these recruiting services that are out there, these baseball. I get a call from someone back in Chicago, you know, "We'd like to get your kids into this system so that, you know, college coaches can find out about them." And on the one hand, I'm thinking, yeah, my kids are pretty good baseball players. I don't know if they're good enough to play college, but I don't want to be that delusional little league dad who thinks, you know, "God, my kids are so good." And then, you know, there's part of me that's thinking, "Oh man, it might be a racket." And they're just, you know, they're playing into that delusional dad aspect that's out there. And before I know it, I'll be sending off $2,000 to Chicago for no good reason at all. And so I guess my point is that I just want the kids to play sports for fun. And Dave, I think you've said this before too, that if Mikey and Stevie are good enough to play college ball, let's say they are, someone's going to find them. And so I always come back to that. And the last thing, when you talk about Bruce Brown talking about 90% of the car rides home, the kids just hate it. That's always stuck with me, because I've heard you say that before. And that's the last thing I would want my kid to say is like, God, I couldn't stand driving home with Dad because he wondered why I struck out with the bases loaded. You know, I mean, come on. So some really good food for thought there.
Yeah, good stuff. And you talked about your dad's collection of photographs and pictures on the wall. It's safe to say that probably his most prized photograph is the one of you and I in New York, right, Dave?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're on the Wyman Hall of Shame. They call it, Bob. It's a picture that we took. This is where, for those of you that don't know, Bob and I bonded on this trip to the Super Bowl. And mainly it was because Bob asked me 753 questions about my life throughout the week. And at one point I'm like, hey, wait a minute, man. I'm going to ask you some questions here. But we had a blast. And my mom and dad, they love Jim. And but they love you too, Bob, because, you know, they listened that whole week. And so they were really disappointed when we mentioned we were supposed to go down to Peoria and a couple of months ago. And, yeah, they were really excited to get to spend some time with you. But, yeah, you're on the Wyman Hall of Shame.
I love it.
What was that picture, Bob? Like we were getting into like a
subway,
a train or so, a subway. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. We took it at the I think it was at the media party out there for the Super Bowl, and they would superimpose. They said, "Look like you're looking behind glass or whatever," and you know, then they would superimpose like subway doors in front of us, and it turned out pretty funny. It's a funny picture.
The 425 says, "And thus, Question Man was born."
That's no, he was born long before that. That was just Dave's first exposure to Question Man.
There we go.
Oh, good stuff. We love story time with Dave. Meanwhile, Jim wrote a story that's up on 710sports.com now talking about potential cap casualties. And, Jim, you listed a few guys. I don't think you put them in order. You put them in order of how much would be saved, I guess, if they were released. But tell people that haven't read the story, again, 710sports.com, what you wrote about and what you're thinking behind this.
Well, actually, I just listed them in order. I didn't want to go from best savings you would get. Like, if you cut KJ Wright, you save $6.5 million. And actually, I did have him as the number one guy. I don't want to say he's most expendable, but when you put sentiment aside, and if you're trying to sign Clowney or Everson Griffin or someone else, and the reason I wrote the story is that if the Seahawks decide to make another splash in free agency. We know that they made a semi-splash today getting Carlos Hyde from the Houston Texans, but that was for $2 to $3 million, so I guess it was more of a ripple than a splash. But the splash-type signing, they're going to have to do something. They're going to have to cut someone along the way here, and I was just looking at it. Yeah, it'd be easy to line it up and go, well, okay, KJ, you'd save the most money if you let him go, and then Bradley McDougald, he's second in line of guys that you maybe could do without at $4 million and so on. I listed him in order of guys that I felt like were more expendable than others, and with KJ, the reason I put him at the top of the list, again, you have to forget about his history here, but if you just look at the situation the way it is now, with Cody Barton here, Jordan Brooks, your first-round draft choice, Bruce Irvin being able to play some linebacker too, you just wonder about KJ being 30 years old, coming off a good season, but is it worth paying him $6.5 million this year if you really want to get Clowney or Griffin or something like that? So I think KJ's number one on that list. Number two, I've got Brandon Jackson, a defensive lineman. You'd save $2.1 million if you cut him. And no offense, we've interviewed Brandon Jackson. I love the kid. He's really nice. But do you ever sit there and think to yourself, man, where would the Seahawks be without Brandon Jackson? Well, I don't either. So I've got him number two on the list. Joey Hunt at number three. He's another guy you'd save $2.1 million. And he did a great job, I thought. And Mark Schlereth talked about that yesterday, and I thought it was a good pointer earlier this week when we had him on, saying you can do a good job as an offensive lineman, 63 plays out of 64, but if you get run over one time, that's what people are going to remember. And that's what Joey Hunt comes into play with him sometimes. But still, you got Posick as a possible backup, and it's not like Posick has been any great shakes either. But Posick has some versatility there. I don't necessarily want to see Joey Hunt go, but if he does, you'd save $2.1 million under the cap. Same goes for David Moore. And I like David Moore a little more than other people do, it seems. And Dave, I think you like David Moore too, but you got Philip Dorsett, from New England. You brought him in as a free agent. You like what you saw from John Ursua. So there's some other possibilities there where you don't necessarily need David Moore on this roster. McDougald, is Marquise Blair ready to take over at strong safety? If you feel like he does, if he's ready to go, then McDougald, you could save $4 million. I'm not really in favor of that. That's why I have him listed number five on this list. And the guy I really don't want to see him get rid of, that there's been talk about him being a salary cap casualty, is Jacob Hollister. I understand it because that tight end room is just crammed to the gills with guys now, with Greg Olsen, with Disley coming back. You drafted two tight ends with Stephon Sullivan from LSU and Cody Parkinson from Stanford. So Jacob Hollister, and you got Luke Wilson too. But you look at Jacob Hollister and the production he had in the second half of the season last year. He was your leading receiver, and you're paying him $3.25 million. I hope Hollister sticks with this team, but he's a guy that the Seahawks might take a look at cutting if they want to go out and make a big splash in free agency.
So according to your list, KJ Wright is the most expendable. Do I have that right?
Yes. Yes, you do, Bob.
He's more expendable than David Moore.
If you consider the savings that you get with KJ, you have to factor that in too. So it's three times what you're getting with KJ if you were to release him than you would with David Moore.
And I would say KJ, even at this stage of his career, gives you four times on the field what David Moore gives you on the field. I mean, it's your list and it's your order. That's cool, but I can't rationalize that one.
Okay. Okay, these things are debatable, but how about this, Bob? If I put it in this, if I framed it like this, if they get Clowney, wouldn't you rather have Clowney than KJ Wright on your team?
I guess probably. I mean, KJ, I think KJ, like Trey Flowers, gets a bit of a bad rap for last year. I thought he played pretty darn well. He played more physical than we had seen him play. I know he's not what he was when he was younger. But that's true for a few guys on this roster, and he's the least he's not the most guilty of that, I would say. I don't look at him as a liability by any stretch. He gives you something, whether it's his knowledge, his experience, his consistency. He's a presence out there. David Moore is not a presence. He's a guy that he's a blip every now and then. To me, David Moore is just a guy, and KJ Wright is more than just a guy.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the one thing you said, Jim, though, is if you take the sentimentality out of it, because that, to me, with KJ, is 50% of it. And I would say higher because I just love what he brings and everything. But, yeah, also have to look at that. He had a really good year. He had 132 tackles, 6.5 for loss. He knocked down 11 passes, had 3 interceptions. You know, so, I mean, he was really a leader out there. So, I would just hate to have to see that, but you know, you would look at, and I think we have a clip here. I don't know if we have time to play it, probably maybe next break or something, but it's basically Bruce Irvin talking about playing, you know, Sam on first and second down and then defensive end on third down, which is basically KJ's spot. And, you know, he can do it. I mean, he can fill in and play that. And I think he's good, but he's not as good as KJ. That's for sure. So, That's a really tough one because if you look at, you know, those numbers, and let's say you do get rid of a few of those guys. Now, the hardest ones would be KJ, McDougal, and Hollister, and those are the three most expensive ones. Would you trade that for Clowney? Because right there, that's $13 million, $14 million. And if you could get Clowney for $14, would you trade those three guys away for Clowney?
That's a good question. You need something like Clowney. If it's not going to be Clowney, I'm still of the belief you've got to add to what you have defensively. I don't feel great about what's currently there. I don't feel like, hey, we're set. It's going to be night and day from last year. I don't know that. I think it'll be better, but we've already agreed even if they didn't bring in Mayoa and Irvin, just by virtue of it not being the weird aberration that last year was, they would be better statistically. I still don't think they have that double team guy. They don't have that extra meeting guy. So that might take precedent. But good stuff from Jim. Check out the story, 710sports.com, and leave comments. Jim likes when you leave comments on his story. So check it out. Leave your comments. Coming up next, Pro Football Focus ranked the receiving core in the NFL. And not only were the Seahawks ranked pretty low, they were the worst in the NFC West. I don't think we agree with that. We'll talk about it next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, we'll unveil your venom of the week. Mean text coming up. You still have time. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Whatever you've got on your mind, it is your chance. So text it in to 710. Maura sent us a text during the break saying she's very impressed with how people have really jumped on board today with this. So they're very excited to take shots at us. And we'll get to that coming up in less than 15 minutes. As we told you, Pro Football Focus did a ranking of all the receiving core and the receiving cores in the NFL. And then they weren't kind to the Seahawks. They had them ranked pretty low. They actually had them ranked the worst receiving core in the NFC West. So Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, Philip Dorsett, and then Greg Olsen, excuse me, is what they listed for the Seahawks tight end there. They go three receivers and a tight end. 49ers have Deebo Samuel, Kendrick Bourne, and then their rookie, Brandon Ayuk, and then tight end George Kittle, who is great, as we know. Cooper Kupp for the Rams, Robert Woods, Josh Reynolds, their tight end, Tyler Higbee. Cardinals with DeAndre Hopkins, who you could argue is the best receiver of the entire group. In the NFC West, Larry Fitzgerald, Christian Kirk, and tight end Max Williams. So looking at on the surface, I would say the Seahawks across the board, if you're just going, you know, one through four there, three receivers and a tight end, I would take them over the 49ers at this point. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins really sways things, but you've got a much older version of Larry Fitzgerald happening out there in Arizona. I'd certainly put them ahead of the 49ers because you got an unproven third receiver there in Brandon Ayuk. They have got a great tight end in George Kittle. But how do you guys see it? I certainly don't think they're the worst in the NFC West. I don't think they're the best in the league by any stretch. Not making that argument.
Well, in the division, you mean? Because I mean, looking at DeAndre Hopkins has the numbers, Larry Fitzgerald, you can't really argue with that. And the same thing with, like, even if you look at the Rams, if you just go and look at numbers, yeah, I mean, look, Kupp had 1,160 yards and 10 touchdowns. Robert Woods, 1,134, two touchdowns. So, but, you know, I think the guy that would make the difference, and I probably said this enough that everybody's thinking you should shut up about it now, but Will Dissly, if they had him in there and if he had been healthy, I think, you know, that part would sway me a little bit more, because you can't really argue. Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf were very good, two of the better ones in the league. But like you said, a lot of these, Bob, are just kind of projection. I mean, we're projecting Philip Dorsett. We're hoping Greg Olsen is going to be what he was. And if you take him at his word, he said, hey, I'm not doing this just to screw around. I'm competitive. But yeah, I mean, he's with him and Dissly, and then throw maybe Hollister in there too, had pretty good numbers. But I'm just going position by position. George Kittle's the best, right? I mean, he, even if you have a healthy
him or Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
Are you talking league or division?
I'm just talking about the conference or the division here, because yeah, they haven't broken down here. Yeah, as far as, you know, Lockett. But, you know, I don't see how you can put Brandon Ayuk in there when he's an unproven, you know, resource there. All the rest of pretty much everybody here, I guess except for Philip Dorsett, hasn't had the greatest numbers. But for the most part, Kendrick Bourne, Deebo Samuel, I mean, these guys are all really good. I remember talking to Lofatutupu about, he was really impressed with Kendrick Bourne, and Deebo Samuel really good there too. But with that guy, I think that puts the Seahawks ahead of them, just because you're talking about a rookie there. And the Seahawks, you know, really, they have a pretty good group of, you know, that third receiver may not be Philip Dorsett, like we've talked about. That might be Will Dissly in there. That might be Jacob Hollister, who's kind of a hybrid type of guy. So, you know, if you want to throw those guys,
maybe
in there,
it'll be Josh Gordon up there.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, if he's able to stay healthy, he certainly has the talent. We know that. So how about Antonio Brown, Bob? Could it be Antonio Brown?
I certainly hope not. I would like his ability. I just don't want anything he brings to the table outside of his playmaking ability.
Right.
Yeah, well, it could be Greg Olsen, too. I mean, Disley, if he's there and he's fully healthy, we'll see about that. But Greg Olsen, 52 catches in Carolina last year. I know he's 34 or 35, but I keep coming back to Greg Olsen caught 52 passes from Kyle Allen. How many can he catch in Seattle from Russell Wilson? So, yeah, I don't think I'd put the Seahawks number four. I'd put them number two or number three. I suppose I'd put the Rams number one, just looking at the numbers. I mean, Tyler Higbee, he had 69 catches last year. So, and then I kind of side toward Cooper Kupp being from Yakima and playing there at Eastern Washington. And then somebody would say, well, if you're siding for Cooper Kupp using that kind of rationale, what about Kendrick Bourne? He's from Eastern Washington, too. But, I with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, Bob, I think I heard you saying this, and Dave, probably you too. I mean, would you trade? I mean, who's got a better 1-2 punch than Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf? That's got to be one of the top five.
I don't think they do.
In the league. I don't think it's homer talk here. I think you look at Lockett and Metcalf and what they can do. I'm even sitting there going, geez, I wonder if Metcalf's going to be the number one receiver and take that role over from Tyler Lockett. Not that it matters, but I guess it's kind of like 1A and 1B with those two guys now.
Yeah, it's tough to argue that there's a better 1-2, especially in the division. Now, they did this for the whole league, so we got the names for the division, but other teams they put in front of them across the league were the Bucks, the Chiefs, the Cowboys, the Lions, the Chargers, the Bills, the Panthers, the Browns, the Broncos, the Bengals, the Falcons, and the Eagles. So, I mean, you can go through every roster and go, well, wait a minute. And I know Mora pointed out on the show sheet about the Eagles in particular, how the heck did they end up ahead of them? They've got Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson, but they were hurt last year, and they're hurt every year because they're old, as she says, and their tight end is Zach Ertz, who's their best receiver. So it's subjective, right? It's an opinion. It's a conversation starter, but they've got a lot of people ahead, not just the division, but you look at a lot of the teams they put ahead of the Seahawks, you could sit there and scratch your head and go, wait a minute. If you're looking at the top two, DK Metcalf and Lockett, that to me is amongst the best in the league. I'm not trying to say they're the best pair, but they're in that conversation. And maybe it's because you don't have Disley, you don't have the established tight end yet, you don't know what Greg Olsen's going to be, and frankly, they don't have an established third guy at this point, but they're not the only team that doesn't have that established third guy.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, too, when they're doing these rankings, they're going off of numbers, right? And so you look at the receivers for the Rams, yeah, they're putting up huge numbers, two guys over 1,000 yards, but look at the pass attempts. I mean, Garoppolo's the lowest. He's only 40 less attempts than Russell Wilson, but shoot, I mean, you look at Russ, he only threw the ball 516 times, Jared Goff threw it for like 110 more, attempts. So it's not really what they're about. And you'd say the same thing about San Francisco. They're not going to throw nearly as much. But yeah, I mean, even Kyler Murray has 542 attempts, which is more than what Russ has by, 30 passes. So that's also something that sort of sways that. And with those lack of attempts, the Seahawks still had two guys over 1,000 yards. Or I'm sorry, you had
Lockett.
DK Metcalf at 900, and Locke was just a little bit above that, 1,057.
All right, good stuff. Hey, a reminder, high school athletes in our region and across the nation had their sports seasons or even their careers cut short by the pandemic, and 710 ESPN Seattle wants to recognize them. So if you know of a local team or athlete that's been impacted by the crisis, then use the hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes. Hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes. Use that on Twitter or Facebook to share their story and why they're your hometown hero. All right, coming up, time to take your best shots. We're going to read your mean text coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We do it every Friday here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. You guys text in every day throughout the week. We always appreciate your input, good, bad. You want to debate, you want to give us compliments, you want to insult us, whatever it is. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We collect them throughout the week, the mean things you say to us, the hurtful. the things you try to bring us down with, and we display them for everybody to show off just how venomous you guys can be. And as long as you're creative, we're on board. We're on board with it, and we'll do the editing on the fly. But DJ, are you going to do the honors and read some of
these? I will do the honors today.
You were very excited about this, by the way. You
I'm
were telling
very, me I'm always excited for this segment.
Go ahead.
509. Bob, your arguments are as weak as a baby in a crib, but don't feel bad. They match your intelligence.
Oh, yeah. I like it. Hmm. Creative. That's good. It's good. Keep it coming.
Bob has lots of questions.
425.
That makes him smart.
425. Dave News defensive playbook? I didn't know that they made them in pop-up format for people who couldn't read.
Rabel uses that every once in a while. He said something about I wrote a book, but it was in crown, color crown or something like that. Yeah, that's a good one. Nice work there.
For 360, I'd rather listen to Bill Walton do play-by-play of a giraffe playing frisbee golf than this bleep.
Wow.
Hey, I'll be compared.
Where are
to
you with
Walton?
Anytime,
man. I love Walton.
You like Walton, Dave?
I do.
I take him in doses, I guess. There's sometimes when I enjoy him and sometimes when I don't. And I think he's going a little too far with the shtick. It used to be, it seemed more organic, if I could use that word without you guys giving me too hard a time. But now it just seems like he goes out of his way to be, you know, out there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that one, Jim. He at one point it was novel and kind of funny, and it did feel natural. Like, man, this guy is just goofy, and he doesn't realize it. And he's certainly leaned on that heavily, and now it feels forced. It feels like he has to play that character.
Yeah, every once in a while when he turns and goes, "What's your name?" That's a little bit much. He does that too often.
He did that to Goldsmith through the entire broadcast. I was like, all right, enough, Bill. We got it. We got it.
From the 360, big time thanks to the editors posting the author of articles online. Hashtag don't click on more.
You okay, Jim?
So is he saying, is the 360 saying that he thinks my stories aren't worth reading? Is that what he's saying?
I think so, Jim.
He's saying when he sees your name, he knows not to click on it.
Hey, 360, occasionally you're right about that. Sometimes I hit the send button and I go, you know, that wasn't one of my best efforts, but damn it, I'll try harder next time.
From 253, Jim Moore is like the first piece of bread that nobody wants.
Oh, the heel?
I like the heel.
You guys throw the heel out? What do you do with the heel?
No, I like to make toast out of it.
Yeah, there you go. Put a little peanut butter and honey on there, maybe a little butter and cinnamon sugar. The heel's fantastic. Jim,
it's
got to
be toasted,
cinnamon
though, right?
Sugar piece of toast.
Yeah.
Yeah, take that as a compliment, Jim. The first piece of bread is often very, very good.
Yeah, backhanded, but I'll take it.
From 206, Bob Stelton lives up to his name. He is as boring as it sounds.
What, the name Bob isn't enticing? It's not exciting and different than every other name out there?
Four, two, five.
I don't know. I never thought your name sounded boring at all, Bob.
We all have boring names. Bob, Jim, Dave. We were about as common as it gets.
From 425, listening to Jim try to argue a logical point is like listening to the professor try to pronounce Tua Tagovailoa. Gibberish.
Who is that again? 425?
Yes.
That's a fair point. I agree with the 425 on that one.
What was the one that he really struggled? I think it was Unique Ngakoue took the professor forever.
Took him a while.
And I think he still calls him, he calls him Yannick still.
From the 925, the picture of Bob on the 710 app looks like he wants to sell me on a pyramid scheme.
It looks like I got a deal for you, man.
I've never thought that about you, Bob. You do not have that. You look like the guy that would be very skeptical of a pyramid scheme.
Yeah. I guess to this guy, I'm the one trying to sell you on the scheme and why it's going to work out well. If you just get your friends involved, you know, they make money, you make even more money. This is how it works. It trickles up. It's great.
I'm sorry to read this one, Bob, but the 253 says, Bob's name is missing an O. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
That's solid. Do they mean it.
Bobo?
No. I like it.
From the 206, Jim Moore is just a nickname. He'd get wasted in the Palouse and then was known as Jim that always said Moore.
Well, he's right on part of that.
That's kind of a thumbs down.
That one didn't. I got wasted in the Palouse.
Yeah.
That one didn't hit as well.
No, I appreciate the effort, though. He took a swing.
He did.
Jim, lay off the booze tonight. I'm going to try and stomach the golfing show tomorrow.
I wrote back to that guy and told him, you know, maybe I'd be better hungover on the golf show. Who knows? But if anybody missed the news, I don't know how you could have missed it because I mention it about every 5 minutes. But the golf show returns tomorrow at 9 o'clock after the John Clayton show. We'll be talking about that charity match with Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. And we'll be talking to Brian Flagel. He's the tournament director for the Bowling Classic.
All right, that's enough. You know,
and we'll be talking to Paul DeSorge.
Text, Jim.
I do like that the ING is catching on because Jim called them the cooking people, so I've been calling it the golfing show, and people are picking up on the golfing show, and that was part of the insult there.
I want the cooking people to listen to the golfing show tomorrow. Do you think there's any chance of that?
Let's see. I'm trying to find one here. Oh, here's a simple one from the 360. If you look at the word nonsense in the dictionary, it just has a picture of Jim right next to it.
Man. Well, somebody here from the 509 is saying that I wasn't athletic enough to play single high safety.
Oh, boy. There you go.
And that's why you don't like it.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I like this, the 425. Who was the biggest dud? Dave in the NFL, Bob as a musician, or Jim at the PI?
Ooh.
That's easy. Oh, Dave was in the league for 9 years. Jim was a writer for decades, and I did not make it as a rock star. So I'm the dud of the three.
Bob, you are a rock star.
I don't know about that. But we got Dave's number one. 26 years.
26 years. That's pretty good. I missed a lot of tackles. I'll tell you what, man. I'm watching some of these videos from like the... First of all, the NFL, the football, is so boring. Back in the 90s, like the games are all 17 to 14, and I was like, God, I'm watching these tapes going, what are you doing, man? Make the tackle. Jeez. So you could argue that Jim might be on top there.
I think you beat more significant odds being an NFL player than I did being a sports writer at the PI, but I appreciate that, Dave. Thanks.
Well, you both did it for a long time. All right, good stuff from all of you guys. We appreciate the input, and you can do it starting on Tuesday this week, but starting on Monday. You can do it every day. All your mean texts, all of the mean, hurtful things you say to us, we collect them during the week, and we unveil them every Friday. So just be creative. That's the only stipulation. All right, coming up next, one of my all-time favorite segments on this show. It is What We Learned, and it's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
Well, once again, as the custom on Friday, we've learned that our listeners can be very, very mean, but very creative at the same time. So we appreciate it. But outside of that, what else have we learned today, DJ?
Well, first, Bob, we learned about your eating habits.
Can you guys barbecue?
No, I don't own a barbecue, and I don't have any idea. I don't cook.
You, what? You don't own a barbecue?
No, I don't own one. I don't. I make egg whites, and that's pretty much it as far as cooking.
That's the only thing you prepare is egg whites.
Well, I make sandwiches and I eat a lot of takeout, and then my girlfriend will do some cooking. So I find my way around it. Yeah, I took a beating on the text for not having a barbecue, not knowing how to barbecue. I'm surprised you didn't read any of those, DJ. They really got up in arms over the fact that I don't have a barbecue.
Well, your man card taken away. About
yeah, I saw that. There's something about the way you say it, too. You called a barbecue. So Bob can't even say it. Barbecue.
How do you say it?
Why do you say it that way, Bob? Barbecue.
Yeah, barbecue.
Yeah, I don't have it. I don't know. It's I like it. I enjoy it when people do it well, but I just have never owned one, and I don't know how to cook. I mean, I cook a few little things that I eat that I enjoy that others would probably eat and go, man, this is really gross. But,
but
I don't know. I've never been that invested in cooking.
Bob, when someone says they don't know how to cook, I always think, well, yeah, you do. You know what cooking is? It's following a recipe. It's, I don't sit here and think I'm a great cook or anything, but if you just pull out a recipe, like Traeger Grills has all kinds of recipes, and I just follow whatever they have for jerky or ribs or pulled pork, that type of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. No. Maybe I'll check into it in the future. Apparently I don't have a man card now. I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know the man card was still a thing, but apparently mine's been revoked.
Okay. Last thing, what do you do with the egg whites? Do you throw them in the microwave or do you fry them?
No. I put them in a pan, put a little milk in there, and then I put a little cheese in there, a little salt, pepper, garlic powder. I dress them up.
What's wrong with
avocado?
The yolks?
Avocado, if I've got it, yeah, absolutely. And Dave was impressed that I can fry up some bacon, too.
Well, Costco has that bacon that you just have to put, like, in the oven, and you heat it up, and it's good to go. Do you get that? Or do you actually
I got raw bacon. I put it in the skillet and cook it up.
Yeah, you're doing better than me there.
Yeah, I'll get breakfast handled. It's just everything else that I'm not doing ribs and chicken and steaks and all that. I'm sure I'd screw those up. What else did we learn, DJ?
We learned the origins of Question Man.
Safe to say that his most prized photograph is the one of you and I in New York, right, Dave?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're on the Wyman Hall of Shame, they call it, Bob. It's a picture that we took. This is where, for those of you that don't know, Bob and I bonded on this trip to the Super Bowl. And mainly it was because Bob asked me 753 questions about my life throughout the week. And at one point I'm like, hey, wait a minute, man. I'm going to ask you some questions here. Bob, remember when we went to Sardi's?
Yeah. Dave, you're familiar with Sardi's, right? Seinfeld, Kramer. Remember that? No? Okay. I do remember, though, there was a moment where you were telling me a story about how you were really good with directions as a kid, and I don't know if you were talking about you and your brother being in the woods and something about just knowing your way and just having a sense of direction, whereas I have no sense of direction, and then we're walking and talking, and we realize we were lost. And Dave's going, wait a minute, I think we're walking the wrong way. Where did we come from? And we're both standing in the middle of Manhattan going, I don't know where we are.
Dude, I'm telling you, this year we went to Philadelphia twice, and I just went out on a walk, and I got so lost, man. I couldn't find my way back to the hotel, and I didn't have my phone with me, and I was trying to get back. So, yeah, I'm terrible. I was okay in the woods, I guess, but, man, cities. I got lost there. I got lost in Cleveland, too. Cleveland, I was trying to walk around, and it would only give me driving directions and not walking directions. And yeah, I'm terrible when it comes to cities, the big cities.
So what'd you do in Philadelphia? Did you finally ask for directions back to the hotel?
I must have. And then at one point, I forgot the name of the hotel. And so I promise you I was sober. But, you know, you go on these trips and you forget, you know, you just check in. It's so easy. You don't have to go to the front desk or anything. And finally, I just walked around. It took me like 45 minutes. And I was probably the whole time not further than like five blocks from the hotel. It was embarrassing.
The beauty of New York, Jim, is that while telling the story about his ability with directions and sense of direction is when we got lost.
We got lost, yeah.
That's good.
What else did we learn, DJ?
We learned that Dave's wife, Shannon, is in more Seahawks highlight reels than he is.
Shannon was always, I just looked at the 1991 on YouTube. You can get the 91 Seahawk, you know, highlight film or low light film in that case. But in the beginning, they show like a shot of like 5 or 6 seconds of her dancing. When I was in London, they had a whole thing that they did like a Seahawk montage. You'd think I would be in there somewhere. No, my wife. She's the one that was. She was always the one in there. That she's in more highlights than I'll ever be.
Yeah, it's for good reason, yeah. Though, Dave. I mean, come on.
Well, I'd rather look at that than watch me make a tackle or fall down or get tackled by Dan Marino. So.
Did we learn anything else, DJ?
One more thing here. We learned. There might be a golf show tomorrow. Who knows?
Then on the back nine, they're going to have alternate shot after both drives. After all the players hit their drives, they take the best drive and then alternate all the way into the hole. And I saved the best part for last. If you're really not interested in golf and seeing any of the action, Charles Barkley is going to be one of the commentators. So I don't think you want to miss that. And if you want more details, the golf show tomorrow at 9 a.m. with Sean Crew, 710 ESPN Seattle. We'll have all of them for you following John Clayton.
You should bring that up more, Jim. People aren't aware.
You know, if only the Brock and Salk podcast could get that kind of promotion.
Wait, yeah, what? Come on. I'm a distant second to those guys promoting their show, okay? I'm a speck in the distance, way, way back. You know, that runner that's way back there? They're crossing the finish line. I still have a long ways to go when it comes to promoting stuff.
I guess the difference is they run commercials incessantly for it, whereas you just shoehorn it into the middle of conversations incessantly.
Yeah, well. Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment, Bobby.
There always seems to be a segue into promoting the golfing show. Always. Yeah. Every show, there's like once an hour.
Honestly, I have fun doing it. I really have fun doing it. And I like working with Sean. I love working with you guys, too. But I always tell people, too, it helps me be a better host on the weekday show doing the golf show on the weekend. And then people go, well, you still suck on the weekdays too. So it mustn't be helping you much. But anyway, that's kind of the way I like to look at it.
Do you feel like if you would be decidedly more comfortable driving this show based on your experience on the weekends?
Not decidedly more comfortable, but more comfortable. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You know,
I just remember the days when Jim would come into the studio just sort of pale, quiet, subdued. And I knew that was a day that Danny was gone because Jim was driving the show and he just looked like he was nauseous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's never been a part of me
a while ago.
Yeah. I mean, Dave does a good job now. I've never really, I don't know, maybe it's in my personality or. I've never wanted to lead the show. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you what, that's one of the threats that has worked against Jim. I mean, you can threaten Jim physically, all that stuff, but, you know, one time when he was laughing because I asked the same question to Clayton when I was leading the show, and I just looked at him and said, do you want to lead the damn show? And that shut him up for good. So I found Jim's weak point.
He takes that one seriously.
He's been threatened physically so many times, he's numb to it. And so apparently that's the only way to get to it.
Yeah.
Is that everything, DJ?
That is all we learned.
All right, good stuff. Appreciate all the listeners, all the texters, our guests, Shannon Dreyer and John Clayton. If you missed any of today's show, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click the podcast button, scroll down to our picture, click on that. It's all right there for you each and every day. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are off on Monday, so we will be back on Tuesday right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You think I'd have any chance with Kyle Whittingham in a dark alley?
Nope.